So trust within our society right now seems to be at an all-time low, doesn't it? Just turn on the news anytime, you'll hear about rampant lies, fake news, data breaches, internet schemes, voter fraud, and phone scams. Large corporations and institutions like banks, mortgage lenders, insurance companies, and governments are no longer the presumably trustworthy bastions they once were. Even companies that on the surface appeared harmless, fun, and useful, like Facebook or Google, are relentlessly manipulating our trust and monetizing our data. Indeed, our constitutionally based, supposedly democratic system, which for so many decades made America a world leader in freedom and equality, is now showing its shadow side and its glaring shortcomings. So whom or what can we trust these days? Interestingly, trust in individuals rather than institutions is growing. Research is showing that people are more likely to trust strangers now than ever before, even strangers on the internet that they've never met. Through review apps like Uber or Airbnb, in which both the service provider and the customer are empowered to give and receive reviews, trust is surprisingly granted to strangers. And there seems to be some balanced algorithm in place that leads people to trust each other, despite not knowing each other longer than the duration of a cab ride. In fact, you're willing to put your life in someone else's hands in many cases. But more often than not, we're having to navigate a sea of fake everything, aren't we? And that can be tiring and scary. And it's particularly hard for seniors who more and more are being scammed by nefarious schemes as technology overwhelms and overtakes our lives. So building a community of trust like this fellowship is perhaps one of the more counter-cultural things we could do right now. It's rare to find any institution, let alone a religious one, I'm sad to say, worthy of trust these days. But a community such as this, where we find integrity, authenticity, and care, is a really precious thing. Through our fellowship's covenant of good relations, our seven Unitarian Universalist principles, our shared mission and values, our conflict resolution committee, and our egalitarian governance structure, we have the mechanisms in place to help us build and sustain such a community of trust. We have guidelines to help hold us accountable and show us how to be trustworthy. So, what are some of the qualities that make a person or an organization trustworthy? Last week, Claudia, introduced you to Professor Brené Brown's Braving model of trust. And as a reminder, if you weren't here last week, the qualities that Brown believes are important for trust are boundaries, so that's our B, reliability, R, accountability, A, vault, which means keeping secrets when you're told a secret, V, integrity, for I, non-judgment, and generosity. Braving, that's the acronym you can use to remember those qualities. And meanwhile, Harvard Business School professor Francis Fry talks about three core components of trust, and they are authenticity, rigorous logic, and empathy. And Fry consults with companies to help them regain consumers' trust. For example, she helped Uber find their way back to being a trusted organization after their bad publicity in the media. So when I researched what a spiritually mature, trustworthy, faith-based community looks like, my heart skipped a beat. I was hoping we were going to measure up fairly well. But do you know what I found? Anyone dare to suggest? Our board president looked really nervous in the first service. My friends, we got an A. Yay! We're like the dictionary definition of a mature, trustworthy, healthy spiritual community. So good on all of you. Here's what I found. According to writer and communications coach Deirdre Taylor, the hallmarks of a spiritually mature community are as follows. First of all, there should be a deep culture of consistency and trust with interconnectedness and collaboration and transparent communication. It's a community in which compassion, courage, and truth-telling are valued. And a congregation in which members can embrace a diverse religious freedom and express their faith in many different ways. Now, doesn't that sound like us? Many of these elements are found in our principles, our covenant of good relations, and our mission statement alone. So there's certainly characteristics we aspire to, if not embody all the time. Now she goes on to say that the next few qualities are a culture of loyalty, appreciation, and reciprocal respect among members. An ethos which supports diversity and inclusion while embracing the inevitable innovation, change, and creativity that come with that. And an intergenerational organization, and you would have seen that at the first service particularly, in which new people are welcomed and mentored, fully supporting their highest good. And a community in which no one is lost. Now, we aspire to all of these too, don't we? We work so hard to be there for everyone who needs us, to be inclusive of multiple generations, cultures, faiths, races, lifestyles, and backgrounds. And according to Taylor, the final traits of a spiritually mature organization are a culture in which power structures are horizontal or rotating and collaborative with easy access to leadership. And I hope you feel that you have that. A community in which people are willing to sit with discomfort and difference and co-create new stories together. And an organization in which there's a clear code of ethics, in which members do their own inner work, and there is continuous self-reflection, self-evaluation, and inquiry. Now, do you recognize us in those qualities? Hello, everybody, are you still awake? Because if you're not awake, it's time to wake up. Because I'm not saying we're perfect, but this reminded me of the importance of our UU principles and our CVUUF Covenant of Good Relations, which are our clear codes of ethics. And just like the children on the playground in our story, we have these mutually developed covenants. And the covenants create a container within which we can experiment and worship and make music together and grow and laugh together, in which we can make mistakes. And we can fall flat on our face and then help each other up again. We have guidelines on how to come back into relationship as we walk with each other through the ups and downs of life. So who here can remember some of the important elements in our CVUUF Covenant of Good Relations? Raise your hand with something that comes to mind from our covenant and I'll repeat it. Now, obviously, new people, you don't have to participate in this part. But which members here can remember something from our covenant? Yes, Colleen.
When you're in trouble with somebody, speak to them, not to other people about them.
Right, so speak directly to people. Don't triangulate. Speak directly to them, not to others behind their back. That creates a great culture of health. Yes, Delilah. Assume good intentions from people. That's right. Yes. Who else? All right, looks like we've got some homework to do. Yeah, go, Randall. What do you remember?
Listen deeply.
Listen deeply to one another. Yes, yes. Anything else? Yeah.
Expect and appreciate differences in the different paths that we each have.
Expect and respect differences and the different paths that we each have. And that's the beauty of this community of ours, that we can all have our own belief systems, our own paths through life, but we respect one another and we walk together with that difference and respect each other in that difference. Great. Anyone else? Anything else? Okay, I've got a few written down here, a few more. Speaking honestly and directly with people is important. And forgiving ourselves when we make mistakes. And forgiving others when they make mistakes. And I had to do just that this week. When I slipped up, I had to forgive myself and come clean with somebody about something that I didn't feel good about. And yeah, I think you covered all the, and one last really important one, and that is expressing gratitude for each other. Expressing gratitude for each other. And being self-responsible and accountable. And I know that in the covenant, you've all said that you're going to hold yourselves accountable to know what's going on at the fellowship, to be informed and involved with the fellowship. So I encourage you to look at the covenant regularly and perhaps meditate on how you might embody its different aspects. It's on our website, so you can see it there. Maybe take a look at it once a week and pick one piece of the covenant and work on it that week so that we can all live into it. Because there's a lot of words, a lot of ideas that you all came up with. But in order for us to fully embody it, we need to keep refreshing it in our minds. And of course, it's never going to be lived into perfectly at all times. We're all perfectly imperfect humans, after all. All of us, me included. But it's something we can return to time and time again, to begin again in love. And that's what undergirds it all, beginning again in love together. I love that phrase. Indeed, the covenant is what's helped make this community so healthy and loving. And it has helped us to develop trust in each other and become that spiritually mature community. And it's part of what helps strangers who step foot in here feel safe. I remember the first time that I attended a Unitarian Universalist congregation, I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop. Do some of you have that same experience? These people couldn't possibly be this nice or this welcoming or this full of integrity, this wholesome. Was this place truly somewhere I could be myself and feel loved and accepted just as I was? Did these people really walk their talk, unlike so many other religious organizations that put on a good front, but as soon as you get to know them, they reveal their inconsistencies? And much to my surprise, as I returned week after week after week, I found that the other shoe never dropped. These people did indeed walk their talk, albeit with one shoe. And they showed an earnest desire to be good to one another. And even more astonishing was that Unitarian Universalism did not seem to be just a Sunday morning only kind of faith. Rather, people seemed to work hard at living their shared values of justice for all, of interconnectedness, of integrity and compassion 24/7. And underlying it all was a palpable respect for humanity. You could see everyone's ardent desire to be decent human beings, being decent to other human beings. And that's countercultural these days, when hate is so much a part of our culture. Decent human beings being decent to other human beings. And that's apparent on a larger institutional level as well. Throughout the years, as we've realized our blind spots as a Unitarian Universalist Association, whether it was the heteropatriarchy or ableism or the embedded structures of white privilege in our culture, as a faith, we've committed to learning about these unaware places. And we're committed to maturing spiritually and growing wiser, more loving, and more inclusive every day. Which brings me to our current stretch project as a community. And those of you who are new here today will have heard a little bit about it in our announcement, that of finding an additional name for our congregation, something that expresses our identity more succinctly and more memorably. So today, as you've heard, is the first day to vote. And we all get to choose 5 names among the 74 suggested. I know that's a lot, right? As we begin this democratic voting process, I invite us to to trust the wisdom of our community, to trust our beloved community is spiritually mature enough to do this well, to have faith that we can relax into this. And like the old phrase says, trust the process. There's a collective wisdom that we can surrender here to, a collective wisdom that comes from our shared mission, which you see up there on the wall. We're all on the same team, dear ones. We all want what's best for our fellowship, don't we? The collective wisdom that built this community, which has grown and thrived for almost 60 years now, is with us today. And those of you who've been here a long time have witnessed so much change over the years. I'm sure you've experienced navigating your way together through numerous joys and challenges. And you know that we can trust each other, or we wouldn't be here. You know we're a spiritually mature congregation poised to step into the future, into our next chapter. So having said that, I want to acknowledge that it might be easy to feel paralyzed by the vast number of names to choose from. And that's a natural feeling. Or to be stuck trying to find the one right name, like the one love in the world. What is the one right name? Could it come to us? But I'd venture to say, my friends, that there are perhaps 10 to 20 names on that list that could work just fine. There likely is no one perfect name, just lots of wonderful possibilities. And in the end, it probably doesn't matter whether the name chosen by the majority is the name you picked or even like, or whether that name rises to the top of the heap are the names that you originally chose. What matters more is that this is a loving, democratic process which allows all of us to participate while growing spiritually and psychologically. This is actually a spiritual growth opportunity for us all to let go of our personal preferences and embrace the collective wisdom. It's an opportunity which teaches us to expand our hearts to one another's ideas and thinking, to one another's worldviews, even if they're different from our own. A process that teaches us to have faith in our collective wisdom, which will bring what is needed. Our collective wisdom and will is strong. Just look around you. This, all of this, only exists because you together made it happen. It's not just the work of one or two people, it's your collective co-creation, a co-creation that you can have faith in, which has stood the test of time. And it's a community that has continued to reinvent itself to match the needs of the current population. And I'm guessing what it's taken all along is a willingness to compromise, to trust, and be generous. To remember that your individual likes and dislikes are less important than our sense of collective mission for this beloved community. That I becomes subsumed by we. Let me say that again. I become subsumed by we. And that's a big spiritual growth opportunity, I know. But it's one that our whole denomination is currently working on. In fact, our General Assembly this year in June in Spokane, Washington, the theme is the power of we. We're aiming to move from being an association full of individuals, full of individual congregations, into a collective in which the we is more important than the I. My friends, just this week, I sat in meetings with you doing the work of the we, doing the work of this congregation, and my heart swelled with gratitude for the earnest devotion and commitment so many of you have to this community. Now, I couldn't minister here without your loving collaboration. And this amazing fellowship wouldn't exist without the dedication and care of so many of you. So many of you believing strongly in what we do and who we are. So many of you giving selflessly of yourselves for the betterment of this fellowship and of this world. Everything we do here, everything we see here is a result of co-creation and collaboration for the greater collective good. And trust. You trust me, I trust you, and we trust each other to grow a beloved community that is dedicated to nurturing spiritual courage and making the world a kinder, more compassionate, more inclusive, and just place for all. And isn't that something really countercultural right now? So when I reflect on the quote by the American statesman, politician, and lawyer Henry Stimson, which is on the front of your order of service, which says, "The only way you can make a person trustworthy is to trust them," I think of a joke. The fire brigade were trying to rescue a man from the 10th floor of a burning building. And the fireman shouts out, "Jump, and we'll catch you in this blanket." And the man replies, "No way, I don't trust you. Lay it on the floor." So Stimson's quote and the man remind us that to be trustworthy, we first need to trust each other. To restate Stimson's quote for our community, the only way you can make a community trustworthy is first to trust it. My friends, my beloved ones, we are the ones who make this organization a trustworthy one. We do so by imbuing it with our trust, by undertaking risks together, by persisting through challenges, by hanging in there even when the majority makes decisions that we might not like. And we do so by being the kind of people who are worthy of trust. And we do so by trusting each other. Decent human beings being decent to other human beings. That's us. That's how I see us, and I hope how you do too. So as we undertake this sacred task, and it is a sacred task, of finding an alternate name for ourselves, I invite us to trust that a good enough name will arise. A good enough name. And to keep reminding each other, we're approaching this from a place of love, from highest intentions, and a sense of shared mission in the world. To keep remembering, we're on the same team. Trust the process. Trust each other. And trust the collective wisdom of all of our hearts and minds, of our history, and our vision of the future. Are you ready to do this?
Yes.
Let's do it. May it be so.